Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
So instead of guessing and projecting and being afraid, getting information, real information, is what we want to do here on this show. Jordana and Paul, thank you for spending some time with us on this Monday afternoon. Tanya Gladney is a doctor and associate professor of law enforcement program. She is in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice at the University of St. Thomas. She is here to join us talking about what it means. What do those words mean? Dismantle or defund the police. Dr. Gladney, so happy to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I enjoy. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, you got it. So when you hear those words, the Minneapolis Police, the City Council said, we are going to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Force. What does that mean to you?
What that means to me is that we are going to we're going to eliminate the current structure in its current form. And we're going to rebuild a structure that works for the community. Because the current structure does not work. It is very obvious. It does not work for the community because it's very criminal justice focused. And it doesn't have the voice of the community, in which the community has been advocating for changes for many, many years, centuries. And to dismantle policing, for me, it means that the community dictate how they want policing or any form of policing, how they would like for that to look in their community.
So, Professor Gladney, what, as you were talking, it sounded like sort of basic democracy, right? That local people make the decisions. And what works in one neighborhood may not work in another neighborhood. Is that what we're talking about, sort of fine-tuning enforcement to meet the need, specific personnel that maybe can help if somebody is having a problem with disabilities or mental health? So in other words, dispatch a specialist. But what about those times when you really do need somebody who can keep the peace?
Absolutely, and that's a great question. For the first part, I would like to also mention, when you mentioned democracy, and the way that policing was actually structured for the U.S. is that it was given the power by the people, right? By the people, and the community dictate how law enforcement should provide that safety, driven by the rule of law. The problem we've had is that when you have institutional racism, that structure is not going to work for everyone. So therefore, the system doesn't serve all communities equitably. So when you look at that particular model, that's the model that that's the model that's currently been under the spotlight to dismantle. When it comes to crime, that's usually the main focus, because I feel like as a nation, because we're used to this traditional model with policing and crime, that I think sometimes if we take a step back and reflect on when police officers show up, it's not always in relation to crime. But the way we deal with community issues is through a criminal justice approach. So if there's unemployment, if there's high rates of poverty, and as a sociologist, we look at this as push factors. Push factors. These are factors that push people into crime. A community-led policing model will address the social ills and reallocate funding for those specific challenges that communities are having that does not have to be addressed through a criminal justice approach. And currently the system that we have is through a criminal justice approach.
What I was hearing from our listeners was that, well, what happens if I call 911, or what happens if somebody gets stabbed at a Twins game? But under this model, there would still be people with guns and badges to protect us from bad guys. Is that correct?
Exactly. To dismantle police or defund the police, it depends on the model that will be developed. It doesn't necessarily mean that there will be no police present. It just mainly means that the community have say in how they want police to show up in their neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. They're saying that police may not play a primary role. They may play a secondary role. And depending on the actual model, policing of itself may just be a different form. So if someone calls, the focus will be more on addressing the actual call. And it may be the person that needs to show up. It could be someone in the form of policing, but they may not show up with a gun. This may not be a call where we need someone to show up with a gun. We may need someone to show up with a different expertise depending on that call.
And again, Professor, the statistic, I've recited this a couple of times during the show today, which, again, blows me away. Half of the police killings involve somebody living with mental illness or a disability. And so, again, to your point, dispatching a specialist who can de-escalate a situation so that you don't need to resort to violence to keep the peace. I mean, is that sort of what you're getting at?
Exactly. And to defund means to reallocate those resources. Again, it's such a criminal justice approach, and the funding tends to go towards policing to deal with these issues in the community. The community is actually saying, no, we need those funding to go in specific areas that's the needs of the community. And we can reduce some of those push factors and also in the same time reduce criminal any type of criminal behavior if you could address those push factors.
Okay. We're speaking with Dr. Tanya Gladney, an associate professor and law enforcement program coordinator and from the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice at the University of St. Thomas. Dr. Gladney, first of all, thank you for clearing so much of this up. And I want to ask that this is already working. Am I correct? In other cities, we've quoted Camden a few times. I think there are parts of Los Angeles. So this isn't like so new and revolutionary. Is this already a successful model elsewhere?
I think what's new about it is that I think we're seeing that we're having more conversations about not working within a system, right? And it's bringing a lot of conversations like we're not working in a system. The community is saying we don't want to work in that system. There are other elements of community-led policing, but the challenge with those particular models is that the voice of policing and the voice of law enforcement still tend to have kind of the say-so in how much the community is involved. And so the final decision is usually still left up to the police department. I feel like what we're seeing now in Minneapolis is that the community is saying that, hey, we are dictating how we want this to look. We're no longer asking to be invited to the table. It's our table, and we will dictate how we want policing to show up. So I think that's what we're seeing more now with this particular model, is that the community is saying that we are the driving force behind what this model would look like. And I think traditionally, police departments have been the ones who've had to say so.
Professor, we only have like 30 seconds left, and I apologize, but I need to ask you this question. A, is this different? It sure feels different to me. And B, is there anything at all that gives you cause for optimism?
Oh, absolutely. I feel that it's different, and it feels different for some, but the voices and the requests and these demands are not different. They're not new. It's been around. These requests have been around. I'm very optimistic because it is great to see that we witness a very horrible tragedy, and there's there's more of a conversation towards justice and not so much of holding back. And so I'm very optimistic that the community has created their table. They're not asking to be at the table, that they have said, this is what we want it to look like. And I'm very optimistic because it is a model that will address the needs of the community, which has been ignored and unfunded for many, many, many centuries. And this is what they're saying now. Defund, allow that funding to go to the area that's of really need. And you really do get at the root of crime when you look at this model. So I'm very optimistic and look forward to seeing how the community will say this is how we want policing to look.
Dr. Okay. Tanya Gladney at the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice at the University of St. Thomas, thank you so much. It was great to talk with you today. We learned a lot.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the invitation.
Really? Okay. I hope that clears it up for some people. You know, there's not going to be any cops. Don't worry. There'll still be cops. If you need somebody with a baton and a gun, they will be there to de-escalate whatever situation might be happening.
Absolutely.
Paul, coming up, we're going to check back in with Brandon Eisen. He is live at the George Floyd visitation in Houston. And also Dr. Stacey Moroshek will talk COVID next on CCO.
Dave Josephson producing today. We want to get right to our reporter, Brandon Eisen, who is in Houston for the George Floyd visitation. What's the latest, Brandon?
Well, you know, as things are wrapping up in front of the Fountain of Praise Church for the viewing of George Floyd's body, I decided to, you know, kind of walk around the area just to see what other happenings might be going on. And, you know, one thing to note is, you know, as I said, it's not very loud. There's not any sort of demonstrations really necessarily going on, but there are a lot of booths set up within the perimeter, you know, a couple of blocks away, up to about half a mile down the road each way. Where, you know, people are handing out certain attire and with slogans on it concerning, you know, justice for George and Black Lives Matter, but then also face masks and water and such for people that, you know, there's a lot of people that are actually didn't take the shuttle service, and I don't know where they parked, but at points throughout the day, many large crowds can be seen walking down the street, in the middle of the street toward the church where the body was being viewed. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with, no sidewalks, as you approach the church on that side of the street.
Brandon Eisen, we appreciate your live reporting and perspective, and, we'll get back to you. Thank you so much for the update, Brandon.
Thanks, Brandon. We're now going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to talk COVID because we just haven't done that as much anymore. We try to give it at least one segment a day, and I'm so grateful to have Dr. Stacey Moroshek, pediatric infectious disease expert with Hennepin Healthcare, joining us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Dr. Moroshek, thanks again for joining us.
Happy to be here. Good evening, everyone.
So can you give us sort of a state of the state? I've been hearing that things are on the decline in Minnesota. Is this true?
We are right below our hospital capacity, and they've been slowly plateauing, I think. Couple of issues. One is I think we're all a little worried about what rebound we might have in COVID given the recent protests and riots that we've had. Because we know things like tear gas induced coughing, some people weren't wearing masks at these gatherings, and any kind of mass gathering causes increased risk with the COVID going around. I think the other big thing is that, you know, we talk about ventilators and we talk about hospital beds, but I think the thing that we forget about sometimes is hospital staffing. And we really are stressed, I think, with staffing at this hospital and most hospitals because the people are just getting really worn out and tired. And it's a certain skill set that not all of us can take on. And there's a limited number of nurses out there that can, you know, manage some of these sick patients.
Doctor, this is Paul. Two things really caught my eye today, and I'd love to have you comment briefly on each one. People with high blood pressure are dying at a rate twice what people who have low blood pressure are dying at. What is the reason for hypertension being a risk factor? And also, the CDC says one out of three Americans surveyed have used some kind of risky cleaning practice to stop the spread of COVID-19. 4% of people admit that they've drunk or gargled household cleaning agents like bleach.
Oh, my God. 18%
of people say they've applied cleaning agents to their skin. So once and for all, can you touch on that? Bad idea?
Oh, my gosh. Sorry that we asked you that. We understand these people have zero brains.
Yeah, bad idea. Let's go to the first one. I think, sorry, I just lost my train of thought here. Let's tackle the second one.
Gargling with bleach was the first one.
Yeah, gargling with bleach, not a good idea. Bleach at all, hydrogen peroxide, none of that stuff is a good idea. You know, I do think people probably don't know that some of the cleaning products on your skin aren't a good idea. So that's an educational piece. But I feel like, you know, the contact of, you know, skin to skin or skin to surfaces is probably showing to be less of an issue than, you know, people out in the community sort of coughing, not knowing they're sick, you know, symptomatic, that kind of stuff. Not a good idea. More risky than getting COVID at this point. The other question was high blood pressure and why these people are dying at a higher rate. And I'm not sure, but I wonder if it doesn't have to do with the clotting issues that we're seeing with some families. We know that people with high blood pressure are more likely to have strokes and other issues like that. And we also know that COVID does have an increased sort of clotting predisposition, and we've been using anticoagulation on a lot of the patients that come in with COVID for that very reason. And I wonder if the two of those things together might not be causing increased risk of morbidity and mortality for those with hypertension.
And we only have about a minute left, Doc, but talking about a spike, when and if, I mean, would this happen? Like another spike late summer?
Yeah, well, two spikes, actually, or even three. I mean, one is I think we're worried about, you know, up to 14 days post the last mass gathering of people with the protests and riots. That, I think, is the most immediate concern. The second issue is, you know, what's going to happen in October, November when schools resume? And then if this follows other pandemic patterns, then we would maybe see a smaller peak again the following spring. I like to think of this as a foothill, next spring a foothill in the major mountains, probably October, if it follows the path of other pandemics.
Interesting. All right. Well, yeah, that certainly is the way that the 1918 Spanish flu went. Dr. Stacine Maroshek, pediatric infectious disease expert, joining us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline. Doctor, thank you so much.
Happy to be of help. Wash your hands, wear your mask.
Thank you. Thanks, Doc. Yep. Stay safe. So what did Mayor Jacob Frey say today after he addressed the media and told protesters he was not going to dismantle the MPD? Sloan Martin told us. She'll tell us again next. It's 5:50. Jordana and Paul, well, welcome back. You lasted the whole 3 hours, buddy. Good job.
Yeah, I'm still exhausted from driving that RV 3,000 miles. That's my excuse. Right. I'm going to stick with it.
Well, we're glad you're back, and thank you for hanging out with us, and thank you for listening as well. You know, it's time for having tough conversations. We're all a little confused. We're a little shell-shocked. We're horrified. We're challenged now to do better with new information that we have. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey addressed the media today after yesterday where he told protesters he was not in favor of dismantling the police department. Our Sloan Martin was there. Here's what he said.
He really doubled down on that, and he continued to say, I'm in favor of reimagining the entire department, but not abolishing it. So he, even with what happened yesterday, and I'm sure we've all seen the videos on social media about how strong that response was, he still is committed to saying that, and he still is putting his support behind Chief Madaria Arredondo and saying he is the person, as someone who once sued the department for racial discrimination, who has the integrity and the means to be able to completely turn things around. So what we got today was, I think, as opposed to a specific plan for how his differs to maybe what the council is starting to think, because we don't have a crystal clear idea of even what that is from the Minneapolis City Council. But he said, in his words, in the next few weeks, taking a fine-tooth comb to all policies with the Minneapolis Police Department. And he even said strongly, too, that they can't ignore the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is the police union. So trying to really address what that looks like going forward. He called it a full-throated effort over the next year and a half in his term to address specifically not just the culture, but also the role the police union plays. But no, nothing extremely specific right here today.
And as always, we appreciate Sloan's perspective on that, which you can get every afternoon right here on CCO. Dr. Tanya Gladney from the University of St. Thomas helped us understand what defunding or dismantling the Minneapolis Police Department might actually look like.
To dismantle police or defund the police, it depends on the model that will be developed. It doesn't necessarily mean that there will be no police present. It just mainly means that the community have say in how they want police to show up in their neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. They're saying that police may not play a primary role. They may play a secondary role. And depending on the actual model, policing of itself may just be a different form. So if someone calls, the focus will be more on addressing the actual call. And it may be the person that needs to show up. It could be someone in the form of policing, but they may not show up with a gun. This may not be a call where we need someone to show up with a gun. We may need someone to show up with a different expertise depending on that call.
I think that's so important to understand.
Yeah.
Because, Paul, we heard a lot of fear on the show today. I see it on Twitter. I see it anywhere. That what's going to happen? Oh, my gosh, if there's no more Minneapolis Police Department. Oh, my gosh. Well, if there's no more Minneapolis Police Department, they will stop killing black people, God willing. But then it'll just look different. It will look different. Somebody with an expertise in trauma might show up for a victim of sexual violence. Somebody with an expertise in child abuse, God forbid, might show up on that call. And somebody with a gun and a baton may show up to, you know, a violent outburst outside of a bar where force is needed. So this isn't abolishing law and order. This is just changing how it is applied.
It's fine-tuning the process, mm-hmm. right? And making sure the right specialist shows up at the right time for the mm-hmm. right threat.
That's right. That's right. So I think that's really interesting. And I think it's and we don't know. There are still questions, and
right.
people don't like when there's squishy spaces in the middle there. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like or how it's going to feel. I do know this, that it's not going to be perfect, that there are going to be a lot of issues surrounding it to fine-tune it and to make it better. But if it saves lives, if it brings equity, if the community feels more safe and more heard, then I definitely think that that is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's incumbent on all of us to keep an open mind, right? Especially now we don't have details.
Sure.
As the details come out, they will be debated, and mm-hmm. let's just see where it goes. I'm trying to keep an open mind. I hope people will keep an open mind. We have no idea what's actually going to happen, but let's let the process and democracy take over and see what happens.
Also today was the George Floyd visitation in Houston. Our reporter Brandon Eisen had some comments. He is live there now.
Thousands of people have come through throughout the day. Right now it has kind of died down as opposed to, maybe around 12:30, 1 o'clock, where you had several hundred people lined up outside waiting to get in. But now you've got, maybe over a little over 100 people waiting to get in, and about the same amount of number of people waiting for the buses to take them back to their vehicles. They had shuttled people in here today, and they did a really good job organizing this event to where You know, they had a giant parking lot down the street and just kind of picked people up there, brought them in. They got in line, single file, and made their way through the viewing of George Floyd's body.
So there you go. That was Brandon Eisen. Mm-hmm. Thank you again for joining us. We appreciate you being here. And we missed, you know, Paul, when you've been gone, we haven't really done our meditation moment as often as we should, even though we need deep breathing now more than ever, because I've been asking the folks for a prayer. I've been asking for them to chime in and sort of give us some words of encouragement. And today I received words of encouragement from David, who said this, sent me an email. He said, Jordana, I left without leaving. Today I spent time with a friend at the George Floyd Memorial at 38th in Chicago. The sheer volume of flowers and signs was overwhelming. People were remarkably respectful and reverent. My feelings of sadness and hope lingered after I left. One sign stood out among the others. It was about power, but not the kind that can be abused. The man we came to mourn personified. Peaceful power. I thought it was a very beautiful email. And David, I'm glad you went. It is a beautiful place. I encourage all our listeners to go down to that memorial at 38th in Chicago.
Check that out for myself, Jure. I think everybody does. Thank you. Catch you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.